And we are back.
We're back?
We're back. It's only been, I don't know, a couple of years,
I think. It's been like 2 months, I think.
So like 2 years in 2020 time.
Yeah.
Right. It feels like forever.
Hi.
But we're back.
Yes. Welcome back to Pod is Dead.
Pod continues to lie dormant in state. He can be viewed on regular business hours from Monday through Friday. However, please be sure to wear your masks when viewing the casket. And, of course, stay 6 feet away from all the other mourners.
You best believe he was found after the smell was putrid and someone remembered, oh, he has a cat and the cat was eating his face.
Pod had a good life, but he died alone. And I am assuming Pod is a he here. Forgive me.
Let's assume.
Yeah, makes sense.
Tweet us at pod_dead where you think he might have been found. In the toilet? On the base, in like he rolled down the stairs of the basement like an old person.
Did Pod eat a bathtub full of beans and then explode?
The freak.
My favorite suicide method.
What?
Yeah, because it leaves a big mess for your family that they have to clean up.
No. Oh.
It depends on how you feel about your family.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The point is, a cat ate his face.
Poor Pod. Well, here we are in celebration of yet another week of Pod's life.
Did you have your eulogy?
Yes. We sang the Pod song.
Yeah.
Pod is dead. Long live Pod. So I think last time we did a movie episode, right?
Did we?
What was it?
We're horrible.
I don't even...
We're bad hosts.
Something about...
We're bad hosts. We tried
was
to...
Was it Zoolander? No, it wasn't Zoolander.
It's no, movie. Dennis Quaid.
Oh, the Dennis Quaid movie. I completely slipped my mind. I have forgotten all about Dennis Quaid during this pandemic. And Dennis, I apologize. We're here for you.
We love you.
We're your number one fans.
We want to know that we support you in whatever choices you make.
We just want to touch your rippled old ab body.
I do.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, where...
So today, that means we have to do a serious episode because it's been a while since we did a non-movie...
Episode,
which means no one's going to listen to this one.
What was the one? It was like Hunger Games for Adults.
Hunger Games for Adults.
The one we watched.
With Hunger Games.
Yeah, with the
for adults.
With the lady with the punchable face.
I mean, that could be a lot of movies.
Hilary Swank movie.
Hilary Swank?
The Hunt?
The Hunt, yeah. The Hunt. That was a great movie.
We were going to do a podcast on that, but then he said the forbidden word and we scrapped it.
I don't even remember what the forbidden word was, and it's
don't
probably
even
good.
Say it.
Something like peas.
Don't say it.
Okay, I won't. Yeah, so we have like half an episode somewhere, but then my Mac dumped the file because it couldn't hold anything, so.
We'll re-record it.
We'll re-record it someday.
At some point.
We'll bring you The Hunt. The Hunt was a good movie, by the way, if you were wondering.
Yeah. Hilary Swank has a punchable face.
So, What's our thematic element today?
We're going to talk about backgrounds and family backgrounds. You know why?
Yeah.
Tell me why.
Because we both had horrible, traumatic family backgrounds?
Yes. Also, and we're going to see my family in December.
Okay.
And we're going to talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Let's talk about that.
We're going to be in California in December. Pod is Dead meetup.
Yeah, Pod is Dead meetup. If you want to come out to Los Angeles... we'll be at Bob's Burgers.
Yes.
So come and have a sit down.
Bob's Burgers is in New Jersey.
It's in New Jersey?
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're going the opposite direction then. Sorry.
Seriously though, we're going to be talking about family backgrounds and upbringings and what it might look like. But before we jump into that, let's quickly talk about where we are, the state of the world, and what's going on in our lives.
Do you want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, state of the world is still in chaos. California's burning, Oregon is burning.
There's an orange tinge. It looks like we're on Mars and where is it, Iowa?
No, there's an orange tinge in San Francisco. It sort of looks like that movie Ghost of Mars, the John Carpenter
yeah.
movie. No, actually it looks a little bit more like Blade Runner. And then Oregon, I have some friends in Oregon, is looking very red, apparently. This is all because of the massive wildfires that, by the way, have now burned down 3% of California.
I'm so very scared.
3 out of every 100 pieces of California you see right now are on fire. And apparently it's all directly attributable to man-made global warming. The cool thing about all this is we can now officially call it global warming again because everything's on fire. So we don't have to pansy out and call it climate change.
Oh, well, you know, as long as we can excusably say that now.
I'm happy about that. And I'm sure Al Gore is dancing on the grave of what used to be planet Earth. Because he was right all along. And there are currently like 8 hurricane systems in the Atlantic that they're tracking. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Something like that. So that's a big problem. And deadly tornadoes, wildfires, and the Arctic is melting.
So if there's anything out there you've been wanting to do but have put it off for some reason, go out and do it. You know, there's no time like now.
We probably only have about 6 years to live, so, you know, go out and live like it.
You know, get married, have a child. Don't do that, actually.
Don't have a child. No, because in the apocalypse, you don't want to have a crying baby.
Go out. Have a sloppy sundae.
Yeah.
Eat 20 burgers at once.
Have a good time.
Pet many dogs.
Yes.
Just go out and do it, y'all.
Yeah. Live your best
truth, life. Right. Yes.
What else is going on?
How has quarantine been affecting you? How's it been going on?
That whole we're still in a viral pandemic, and the United States is the worst of all countries with the highest number of cases. I think we're like 6 or 8 million cases at this point. I don't know. And deaths are topping 200,000. So I think the biggest takeaway from this is it's not as bad as the Spanish flu of 1918.
Yeah.
Slash the Arkansas flu, because it actually started in the United States. So that's something.
What is it? Like 2 9/11s a week or something?
It's like 1,000 people a day. So,
oh.
2-ish 9/11s a week. So I am trying very hard not to forget, but it's happening with such rapidity that I just, you know, filtering it out.
Speaking of, we just passed.
Yeah, 9/11 just came and went. I didn't even get that Subway deal.
Dang.
What was it? The 2 footlongs for $9.11.
God damn it.
That's that Onion article with like the fly-in for September.
Yeah,
September 11th.
the 2 giant sandwiches.
That reminds me, right now there's an ongoing promotion at McDonald's called the Travis Scott meal. And apparently Travis Scott is some rapper or something. And it's just like what this rapper usually gets at McDonald's. Apparently the only other time they've done a promotion like this is with Michael Jordan. So this is like very rare for them. And it's just like a double quarter pounder with lettuce and like a Sprite. But just because like it's 2020 and why not? My very first reaction to that was I thought Travis Scott was one of the names of one of the black folks who died at the hands of police. Because there's been, you know, so goddamn many of them. And I'm like, holy shit, McDonald's. It's like the Michael Brown meal, you know. Don't eat it around a cop, I guess.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
By the way, people, if you do happen to go to McDonald's, get yourself a Sprite Berry. Sprite Tropical. It's the best soda ever.
Yeah.
It's my favorite, and I think I'm going to stop by a drive-thru and get them tomorrow.
Sounds great.
Sponsor us, McDonald's.
Yeah. Do it. Do it, McDonald's. Even though you've never heard of us and we have 50 followers, do it.
Probably less by now.
How desperate are you, McDonald's? You got this.
Oh, God.
What's going on with my life? I am in a deep, deep hole that is work and school. I am on my last semester of graduate school, and I'm ready to kill it all and burn it with fire. Don't go for a grad degree, kids, because it doesn't even matter anymore, because the apocalypse is upon us and school doesn't count for anything.
You know what? Die with a sense of accomplishment.
Sure. We'll go with that. My sense of accomplishment after I can finally sleep after 13 years. And elsewise, I'm in a deep black hole of work where I'm putting in, like, anywhere from 10 to 15-ish hours a day, but it's all on my computer and it's all at home, so I have zero room to complain.
Nice.
Even though I'm probably going to have an emotional meltdown within the next 3 to 5 months.
Aww.
I know, but it'll be fun. And it'll be like, oh, he works so hard, and then people will feel sorry for me.
We'll wrap you up in a space blanket and, you know, give you something to hug.
That'd be great. It'd be just like I ran a marathon, but I'm like, you know, 800 pounds. Even better. What about you?
Work has been killer. I'm trying real hard to keep up, and I don't know how to handle my health.
Yeah.
Yay.
It's a problem.
Yeah, it is.
You're barely getting into work in the mornings. So, That's fun.
I'm 23. I shouldn't be debilitating like this.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't be even in a position in life where if you don't work the extremely stressful job, you know, you fall by the wayside. But that's the economy we live in now, isn't it?
You gotta go out there and make that bread, kids.
Yep. If you don't make the bread, the economy will literally kill you.
Get this bread, mm-hmm. I think is what the millennials say.
That's what they say.
Get this bread.
Is it the millennials who said that, or is it Gen Z?
Who cares?
It doesn't matter anymore. Everybody's the same.
Tweet us how you get your bread and how you've been having your, how you've been dealing with your existential crisis and...
And don't forget to hit like and subscribe. And don't forget to mash that notifications bell so you make sure that you get all the updates from our non-existent YouTube channel. Thanks.
And tell us what you get at McDonald's.
Yeah. Did you get the did you try the Travis Scott meal? I want to know. Do you know who Travis Scott is? I also want to know.
@pod_dead. That's @pod_dead at twitter.com. I promise you, if you tweet at us, we're going to tweet back at you because
no one ever tweets at us. So, yeah. You know, have at it.
DM me. I'm single.
Also, like, Sprite doesn't pair at all with a burger. It's like
it goes well with fries.
Citrus with burger,
but it's
no,
it tastes nice.
You need something darker like Coke and a burger. Yeah, absolutely.
What about like fries?
No, Sprite doesn't go with fries either. Sprite goes with like cheese crackers or something. I don't know, something tangier.
You're white.
I'm sorry, Sprite doesn't go with a burger.
Whatever.
Sprite and cheeseburger? I mean...
I like it.
It just curdles my mouth. Okay, anyway.
Gross.
We're on a serious topic this week, so we can't be fun.
Okay.
Or have fun.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Yes, we can.
Let's have fun with this.
Okay. We're going to be talking about backgrounds and family background and upbringings.
Yep.
Okay. Go ahead and start with you.
My family background.
Where did you grow up?
Yeah.
What did that look like?
So I was born a poor black child in Hills,
God
Alabama.
God dang it.
And by golly, with a banjo on my knee. By the way, that's a movie reference. Please don't cancel me. That's a Steve Martin movie reference. It's called The Jerk, and it's worth it.
-2 people understood it.
-2 people are listening to this podcast.
That's true.
So I was born in Florida, and that's where my mom taught college. My sister was born in Gainesville, Florida, and most of my extended family lives in and around the Orlando, Florida area. My uncle Mickey and my aunt Minnie are doing very well. They've gained a little weight in their later years, but...
That's fine.
Yeah. Still...
still kicking.
Still plugging along. I lived in a couple of dozen different cities growing up as we were moved around from one place to the other. I was not an army brat. That's the question everybody always asks me. Whenever somebody asks me, where are you from? It's like, I don't have a good answer to that because it's like, well, I spent a chunk of my childhood in Ohio and another part in Florida and, you know, some time in Tennessee and South Carolina and North Carolina and other parts of Ohio and Michigan and Indiana and California and Nevada. So I don't know. Wherever you want me to be from, that's where I'm from. I'm anybody from anywhere. I'm anyone who lived in a pretty hell town with up so floating mini bells down. Mm. So yeah, it was, I guess you would say traumatic because, you know, a lot of that time we didn't have a place to live and, kept moving from city to city. So, plus, we were very, very evangelical, conservative Christians. So I sort of, I was born in 1983. So I lived through the 80s and 90s without a clue in the world as to what culture or pop culture was going on during that time. So when I was 14 years old, 15 years old in 97, 98, that was when I started sneaking away and listening to the devil's music, like Shania Twain, Faith Hill.
You discovered Michael Jackson like very later on in life. And when he died, it wasn't a big deal to you.
Everybody my age was all like sad. And I was like, I'm sorry somebody's dead, but like, I just don't give a shit because I know of Michael Jackson. I've heard a couple of his songs and I've never cared. I didn't grow up with him, right? I was homeschooled through most of that, everything but like kindergarten and first grade. up into and including high school, which I didn't really go to high school because I just, mom kind of threw an algebra book at me and, you know, said, do your best. So yeah, I was a bit of a late bloomer. And what else?
Who would you say was in your family?
Who was in my family? So it was just my mom and my sister, who's about 6.5 years older than me. And we were very, little atomic family unit. Sarah decided to leave home. Yeah, Sarah, my sister, decided to leave home when she was about, I don't know, 21-ish. So mm-hmm. I was about 15-ish. And then, yeah, her and I just kind of ended up having like a kind of like a long-distance relationship after that where we saw each other, you know, maybe once a year or so.
How were you treated by your family? Did you like what you had?
Like my mom and my sister?
Like overall, would you say you would trade them for anybody else? Or?
No, I mean, yeah, but no, that's mean. Well, my mom was like a paranoid schizophrenic, and also she had had a career up till about when she was about 30 in being a psychology, professor. And then one day some little switch just, flipped and she decided that she was going to follow the Lord and, that psychology was a lie and, also that everyone was after her and could never then stay in the same place for very long because her reputation kept getting continually ruined and she had to constantly be going on to the next place where this time she could find work. So, God love my mom, but I, you know, I wish things had turned out a little differently. Wish that switch had stayed off instead of the on position, but that's how it worked out. It took me a long time to come to terms with that because, you know, your parent when you're a kid is your sole source of truth and you kind of just believe whatever they tell you. And it took me a really long time to realize that, like, everything that she was saying was a product of this illness that she had and everything that was happening to us was not a result of just circumstances. It was something that she created. And it took me a really, really long time to figure that out.
What was your role in the family?
I don't know. I wasn't like the, oh, you know, the son like becomes the whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was always the youngest, right? And Sarah left when I was a teenager. So I guess my role in the family was just kind of like a hanger on. I think mom, I hate to say that I was the favorite, but I think I was like mom. I feel like my mom always treated my sister worse. My sister had juvenile diabetes from the time she was really young. And, I don't know. I felt like maybe she had like higher expectations of Sarah or something, but, Sarah usually bore the brunt of whatever punishment was coming down. And, I like one of the reasons I don't think I'm nearly as fucked up as I could be is like my mom always told me she loved me. Mm-hmm. Right. And even when she would be like going on a paranoid rant and accusing me of stealing all of her stuff and selling it to my Craigslist girlfriends or whatever, I don't know. I mean, I was stealing her stuff and selling it to my Craigslist girlfriend, but she didn't know about it.
No, it wasn't.
she had this big pile of like paperwork and stuff that she'd been keeping around for a lot of years, and so she was really paranoid about it. And so it was like, yeah, I always knew that she loved me, though. So it was like complicated and it was traumatic, but at the same time, I had like these mental underpinnings that I was a worthwhile person. Mm-hmm. Even though I've struggled terribly with self-esteem and all those kinds of things, it didn't originate from there. It just was kind of, like, external. So, I guess it could have worked out worse, all things considered. And then my sister, we were just, I guess, like, friends, you know?
Yeah.
We didn't have, like, a really... we did have a close-knit family dynamic in the sense that we went through a lot of shit together. But once we kind of all went our separate ways, and by that, I mean, Sarah went her separate way. Mom didn't leave me until she died. We just had more of like a, I don't want to say a cordial relationship, a friendly relationship,
yeah.
Not like a really glowing kind of family dynamic. It wasn't very, I hate to use this word in terms of family, but it wasn't very intimate.
No, I get it. I know what you mean. There's those families that are like, everyone has their role and everyone plays their role and everybody is who they are.
Right.
And they work separately together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like all the parts come together as one and they make the big, gigantic family
right.
function.
People are individuals, but they still compromise a whole.
Yeah. Yeah. But there was a bunch of roles missing where either you or your sister or your mom failed to meet it, or one of you had to overcompensate.
Right.
And it's okay. There's lots of different types of family dynamics, and just because one family doesn't look like the other doesn't mean they're not a family.
Yeah. And one of the things I learned, even though I feel like my situation was really unique. I mean,
it really
most
was.
People don't grow up homeless, but one of the things I realized later in life is that everybody's family in some way has some fucked upness, right?
Oh yeah.
There's varying degrees of that. There's a lot of people who have perfectly normal childhoods, but there's always like some strain or some dynamic that underlies it that complicates things.
What's the phrase? A happy family is happy in the same way, but an unhappy family is unhappy.
All unhappy in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. That's why I'm kind of like, I hate to be like this, but like, I'm sort of bored by people who had happy childhoods. Right. Like, it's one of those things where, like, and like, no offense to people who did have happy childhoods. I'm really grateful for them. I'm not jealous at all. I always wish that I had that. But it's just like, and I'm not speaking about this universally, but I just feel like people who never experienced
real trauma,
may be very good people, but they don't have like a very like core psychological capacity to process traumatic things.
It's the whole, like, the worst thing that happened to you today is your Starbucks order got messed up.
Well, right, because it's all a matter of how high is the mountain upon which you live, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if you've only ever lived in the foothills, then the tallest hill to you will be a mountain. But if you've always lived in the Himalayas, you know, mm-hmm. you look down on the foothills and think about how small they are. It's just sort of like your context matters.
Mm-hmm.
There might be someone out there who is just as deeply traumatized by their Starbucks order being wrong as I was by like having to walk around homeless in the streets of Nashville, Tennessee. And I don't judge them for that because that is the only context they've known. I think I'm a better person than they are, but that's my own like understanding of the situation.
Also, shut up if that's your worst thing.
But I get it, though. It's hard because all you've got is your own context, right? All you've got is your personal experience, and you try as hard as you can to be empathetic, but you can't be empathetic all of the time.
Yeah.
And it's like every time you're having a bad day, you don't want somebody from, you know, some war-torn country coming over and being like, well, I had a worse day. It's like, yeah, people in like, you know, war-torn countries where they're starving to death and bombs are falling have had much, much worse days than you. But like, when you're having to live your life one day to the next, your context is your own.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not trying to discount anybody's experience. I'm just trying to say that like, you should make an active effort to be more empathetic toward people who are worse off than you. And the thing you should always be is grateful that you have what you have. It's okay to want more, but you should be grateful for what you have. And those two things can exist at once. Yeah. Next chapter.
Okay. What did you like about being where you were or doing what you did?
I feel like I got a better perspective on the world than a lot of people because I've seen all different kinds of places, and I've seen all different kinds of people, and I've lived in all different kinds of situations, and I feel like I have been able to get a breadth of experience that most people don't experience. And like, I'm able to see outside of the scope of most people's small town lives, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm going to take any benefit away from it, it's going to be that like, I feel that, and this is how I feel, I don't know if it's true or not, but I feel like I'm able to understand situations and context better. Mm-hmm. Because of that.
I know you grew up with an unstable home, unstable parent.
Mm-hmm.
But be very specific. What was one specific thing you did not like?
One specific thing I did not like the worst thing is not knowing where you're going to sleep the next night. That is the worst trauma of all when you're a kid. Well, that was the worst trauma that I experienced as a kid. Just as like an average was like maybe you get lucky enough to have a hotel room to sleep in, but that hotel room expires at noon the next day. And that means you're hitting the streets again at noon the next day. And when you're a kid, that is just incredibly traumatic. It means there's this constant fear of what the next day brings, that constant daily terror. And like, that's why even now, all these years later, because it's been like, you know, 19 years.
Yeah.
19 years later, I still have this little sense of freedom and gratitude when I pay the rent for a month, because it's like, that is a whole month that I have a place to live.
Yeah.
A whole 30 days. And like, a lot, so many people take that for granted. And I still don't. I still don't.
What is it? John Oliver did a report on like the whole big evictions that have been going on due to COVID, because people can't get a job or have lost their job and they're unable to pay rent.
Yeah.
And he said very wisely, although you might hate the place where you are living, imagine hating not having a place to live.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like I've seen, there was an argument on Twitter about some building that they put in a neighborhood that was housing like homeless families, but a lot of people didn't like it because it looked like one of those like gentrified apartment buildings.
Mm-hmm.
People were really upset about that, like the NIMBY types or the YIMBY types. I don't know. I don't know what's what anymore. But, and I just was like, I was thinking about it like as a kid who had nowhere to live. I would not have given two shits about what people thought the building looked like in their neighborhood, because all I wanted was a roof over my head. That was all that mattered that night. And it's like, I'm not saying that like some of those arguments don't have merit, but at the same time, there are a large number of people in this country who have no place to live at all, or have very inadequate accommodation, or very little food, or inadequate food, and live in really terrible circumstances. And it's like, people have got to take a step outside of their bubble. You know,
like, let them live where they live as long as they have somewhere to live.
Who gives a shit what it looks like? Who gives a fucking shit? That's why I hate like HOAs, you know, like housing associations where they're like, oh, you can't have pink flamingos on your lawn because it ruins the. It's like, who gives a shit? Live in your own place and be happy and be free. You know?
Oh, have you seen that? I forget where I read it. It's not new, but it's been like more on the rise that they're renovating old shopping centers and abandoned shopping malls and all that to make it livable for people who have been suffering through homelessness or COVID evictions.
I'm all for it.
It's nice. Like, an old Bath and Body Works is now your home.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like, there are so many abandoned places like that. I mean, when the housing market dropped down in like 2008, there were just entire subdivisions that were abandoned.
Yeah.
Just houses sitting. That's the thing that gets to me, is there are just rows upon rows upon rows of houses and buildings sitting empty and unused, decaying into dust that will cost money to tear down. And we have one of the worst homelessness and poverty crises in any developed nation in the world. And it's just like, you know, so people have made the comparison to like golf courses, which is like, look at all of this land that is just being used for a game, when you could use all of the golf courses in the country and turn them into low-income housing and basically solve a lot of poverty in this country.
But here's the issue with that. Who's going to benefit?
Well, that's the thing, is the people who have no voice and the people who have no say and the people who have no power are the ones that are going to benefit. And Lord knows, if we give any of them the ability to have a voice, then they might start wanting things to be, you know, better for themselves. And if we let that happen, then that means that the uber rich billionaires who occupy and half-assedly run this country are going to have one less yacht.
Oh yeah.
And one less golf course to play on. So we can't have that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God forbid.
There's no benefit in me giving a homeless person somewhere to live, so why should I do it?
I mean, you're basically asking me to downgrade from a 118-foot yacht to, like, a 90-foot yacht or something. And it's like, what am I, poor? You know? I hate it.
Moving on. Okay. Okay. You knew your living situation was different, didn't you?
Yeah. I think I did. I still, when I was especially younger, I felt like I sort of had this feeling like we had to be going through whatever we were going through because it was just circumstantial. And we were just, you know, at the winds, at the mercy of, you know, the way the world was. I knew that things were different. I have very distinct memories of, like, looking at warmly lit windows in apartments and houses and thinking how lucky the people were inside those buildings to not even know that they had it so lucky, you know? And how I would love to just not be on this bus or this train or this park bench and be inside there, you know? Mm. But at the same time, it was everything I knew, and I didn't know any other way of life. And so it just meant that, like, yeah, I knew this wasn't normal, but at the same time, it was normal for me. Kids are good at normalizing things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It freaks me out a little bit of what we do normalize, and
yeah,
there's no one right way to do something because we all interpret everything differently. But imagine thinking like it was just normal to live on a bus for a day or two.
Yeah
it blows my mind a little bit
because it's your life. That's what it is. So the human brain just makes it part of your life. You might hate it. It might be terrible. You might be traumatized by it, but if trauma is all you know...
Let's microscope it down a little bit. You went into this a little bit earlier, but I'm gonna ask it again. Describe the people in your life, like, in this case, it was your mom and your sister.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more, a little more about them.
My sister was a genius. Like literally, like she could pick up an instrument and learn it within a few days. She could learn languages at the drop of a hat. She probably would have been better at computer programming than I will ever be. So I was always the dumb one in the family. But she could be mean sometimes, and I remember her being kind of self-centered later in her life, but I know she always loved me, so we would get along no matter what. My mom could be loving and could be cruel. She mellowed out a little bit as age went on, or maybe she just got better at hiding things from me. Mm. But she had a real cruel streak when we were younger, I remember. But then, you know, the next day would just be a fine, normal mom, and it's sort of like that creates this thing where in some ways, it almost makes you afraid of people, and it definitely makes you afraid of authority, because you're always afraid of what's around the corner, you know?
Yeah.
I would almost rather have an either all nice or all mean parent, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Just the consistency. It's the inconsistency that really fucks with you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me, do you want to say more about your mom, or are you done?
No, that was it. I mean, they were complicated people. I loved them because they were my family. And they did have redeeming qualities, but it was complicated, you know?
Are you who you are now because of what has happened? Or do you think people have the power to just flip a switch and become whoever they want to be?
Well, I think I am able to flip a switch and become who I want to be because of what I went through.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I think... It took a long time, and there was a lot of negatives to it. You know, I think it delayed my maturity development. I think it delayed my ability to deal with the world, yeah. Right? But one thing that it did for me is it made me very, very adaptable to change.
Yeah.
And because of that, I've ended up having success. It might have been delayed success, but I've had success. And it both made me the person I am and also gave me the ability to not be the person I am in some ways.
I think you're doing really well.
Thank you.
I mean,
I'm making a podcast. I'm like a regular white dude.
Okay. What would you say if someone gave you the opportunity to go back and do it all over again?
Yeah.
What would you do different?
Like, if I could go back to, like, what point, though? I mean, that really matters.
Let's say, okay, you're going to get one shot at this. I'm going to send you back to when you're 5 years old. You have the brain you have now,
mm-hmm.
but you got your 5-year-old body, and go.
I would run away from home and call CPS on my mom.
Really?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You wouldn't see it through, like, oh, I could, you know, tell her, okay, this is going to happen because and that's going to happen.
One of the things I learned, like, listen, my mom lived with me until I was 35 years old because she could not sustain an income by herself. And I was able to witness the fact that she was unchangeable. Her brain, her disease made her unchangeable. Her disease also made it so that she never went to get help for her disease, right? It was crippling. I would have absolutely run away and broken up the family dynamic because it was toxic to all of us. And it absolutely resulted, I think it resulted in, like, both my mom and my sister are dead now and have been for a couple of years. And I think, their health problems, were a direct result of that lifestyle. So.
All right then.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's dark.
Yeah.
I know. But I would have had a happier life.
Yeah,
even if I had grown up in the system, I would have had a happier life, believe it or not.
You would have had a place to stay. Right. You would have had...
I would have had school. I would have had, like, regular schooling.
You would have had regular food.
Right. Now, don't get me wrong. I know there's a lot of really terrible, like, foster parents and like, shelters and stuff out there. But what I'm saying is our situation was so bad, all of that would have still been an upgrade.
You were a small, chubby little white boy. You would have gotten scooped.
I was super cute. I was like the golden retriever white lab mixed puppy at the at the Humane Society.
I'd adopt you.
Who's about to get put down? Of course, they're gonna go first.
I'd adopt you.
Oh yeah. I was super cute.
Let me fill out those papers.
Right.
Okay. What advice would you say? What would you want to say to people who are living currently in a bad home environment, who think they should do something about what they're living in?
Your ability to change your situation is going to be your biggest strength. It depends, you know, if you're a minor, right? That's a different situation, and it's a lot harder to get out of. I know, believe me, having been one. But if you're an adult, if you're a person living with an abusive spouse, or if you are a person living with a toxic boyfriend, but you're in financial straits and you can't get out. I mean, there's a lot of situations that feel impossible, that feel and might seem on their face, like both financially and emotionally impossible. But I don't know how to give advice when I can't give real help, because all I want to do is give people real help. I would love to help every single person out there who needs it. I would love to give them every single dollar that I have and die in poverty. Knowing that I did the right thing. That would be the best outcome. But make plans. Make plans.
Yeah.
Do what you can to make plans. That might be the best thing you have right now if you have no other way out, is to make plans. Sit down and try to really think about how to break this big complex situation up into simpler pieces and simpler steps, and think about how to get away, how to make the financial situation work, how to escape the current crisis. But you have to make plans, and the plans will be twofold. First of all, they if you plan well enough, you can actually get yourself out of a situation. It's not always possible, and it might be really, really difficult. It might be like trying to get yourself out of handcuffs, where you end up like losing a thumb, right? Mm. Where you have to make a horrible compromise in order to get out. But the other thing that plans will do for you is they will mentally help you. They will make you not feel helpless. It will make you feel like you are working on the problem, right? And I know that's cold comfort to people who really genuinely feel like they have no way out. But all I can say from my experience is that has always helped me, is like I gave up on being helpless, because being helpless was too hard to take. I hated the feeling of always being at the whim and mercy of the next charity or church that might give us a free hotel night here and there. And by the time I was 18, I didn't have a social security number. I didn't have a driver's license. I had never had a job. I'd had a job, but not like a job that I could put on my resume.
Stable, yeah. Right?
Yeah. And I basically did everything I possibly could to get I figured out the social security number situation. I got my state ID and I just started working. And it was a horrible job. And it was one of the worst jobs I've ever had. I was a telemarketer for Enron.
And you worked at a motel, hotel?
Yep. And then I went on and worked in hotels for about 8 years. But it got me to the next stage, right? Yeah. It got it. All I needed to do was take that very first step so I could get to the next one. Now, I stayed way too long on some of those first steps because I was still in like tragedy mentality. I was still in everything sucks and is always going to suck mentality, and I have nowhere to go and nowhere to be. But every time I was able to better my situation, and I'm saying this is a white man in America, so don't get me wrong, I am not taking credit for it. But every time my situation bettered, it was because I was able to break out of the mental rut that I was in, where I was telling myself that this was the only situation I deserved and this is the only thing that would ever work. And it was always going to be like this. As soon as I could break that mental model, I was able to be free, but it did take excruciating pain and suffering.
Guys, remember that just because you're in this situation for now doesn't mean it has to stay that way. Like you said, make plans. And just because you're on the first step and it's taking you a while to get onto the second step doesn't mean you're going to be there forever, as long as you make it happen.
Right. But the reason I say like make plans is that if you don't, it's very easy to stay in the rut that you're in, right? So that's, you just have to make that step. All right, so it's your turn. I've talked about myself like for 40 straight minutes.
Yeah, you.
So tell me.
Here.
No, tell me about your family situation, what it was like growing up, who your family was.
Okay, growing up, I grew up in a family of six. I had a mom, dad, older brother, younger sister, and then later on, an adopted foster sister. And there was another smaller one for a little bit, but her dad got custody of her back. Like, good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him for getting his life together to get custody of his kid back. And there was the occasional grandparents staying with us. There was uncles who lived with us. Two, three uncles that helped, like, raise me and bring me up. Like, while my parents were working alternating shifts, like, my mom at night, my dad in the day, and then switch on and off, our uncles would always be there to, like, take care of us in the time in between.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty great, being able to do whatever you wanted while they were in charge. I remember the first time eating homemade French fries. I didn't know you could make French fries at home. Was when one of my uncles made it for us, like from the frozen bags.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know the oven was an oven. I thought it was just like the rest of the stove.
Sure.
Because yeah. We never used it before.
That's where you put the coal that fires the
range. Yeah. But yeah, that was interesting growing up. I always thought everyone always had this like big family all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point where one of my cousins, a family of also six or seven.
Mm-hmm.
Who lived with us, who lived in our garage for some reason or another. They stayed with us for a while, and it was nice, you know, having all the cousins to play with.
Yeah.
Didn't know why. I don't really care. I don't really know to this day, but yeah, I always had a lot of family growing up around me.
So what were you treated like, though?
I was female. Mm-hmm. I still am.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taught how to cook and clean and take care of everyone else and make sure that I learned how to, you know, be a mom.
Mm-hmm.
When my mom wasn't around, and how to take care of everyone when need be. And it was so important for me to be able to play in that role because, you know, mom and dad gotta work, so someone has to be in charge. And even when there was an adult there, you have to be able to do what needs to be done.
Kind of like that 1800s farmhand mentality where it's like people had really big kids so that they could put them all to work on the field. And,
yeah, that was actually my parents' mentality, to have as many kids as you can.
Yeah.
Lots of little hands to work on the farm.
Yep. Not for love, not for, you know, not because it's just like, you know, good thing to have kids. It was because it was like that was what you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah. My mom grew up with 9 siblings.
Jeez.
Yeah. And I remember when she told us about times when my grandpa would come over to the States illegally.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like, he'd come over here and do work for money, and he'd send it home, which was Mexico, to my grandma.
Right.
With her 9 kids. There was times where an aunt or uncle would be born, and without my grandpa being there, my grandma would either have to do it by herself or with the help of one of the other girls, or...
It's a lot of mouths to feed.
Yeah, or with the help of, a neighbor lady.
Yeah.
No, like, even giving birth, she had to do it by herself.
That's incredible.
Yeah, but everyone was hands on deck.
Yeah.
The girls would work around the farm, and the boys would do, like, the land.
Yeah.
And the animals, and...
So, a lot of, I guess you would call it self-sufficiency, but not really, because you guys were operating more like a business, almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how it was at home, too. And my brothers would go work outside, like, they do the lawn work and mm-hmm. whatever, and I would do all the inside stuff that's, you know, like, dishes, laundry, and all that.
Yeah.
And that was, like, the arrangement for a lot of years growing up. So, don't get me wrong, it's nice that I have these skills.
Yeah.
I wish it could have been taught in a more normal setting.
Well, you guys sort of missed out on childhood.
A little bit.
You had some playtime, but it was mostly about work and providing for the family and, you know.
Yeah.
Making sure that you fulfilled your role as a child, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's good that we were taught these skills, but in such intense setting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, but it also sort of, it trains away your individuality, doesn't it? I mean, sort of like beats into you that, you know, these are the things you have to do, and you don't get to think on your own, and you need an authority figure in order to tell you what to do.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, God. I remember waking up Saturday, first thing we got to do, oh, God, okay. Got to make breakfast, and then I got to do this, this, and that. And we've only got until noon, because that's when Mom gets home, and she's going to be tired. And I got to make sure that I have, you know, something for her to eat. Right. And the house is going to be clean, or else she's going to be mad. And,
yep. And always the fear of Mom, right?
Yeah.
She was like the authoritarian.
Oh, yeah. The whole happy wife, happy life thing, but times 10.
Yeah. She was a nightmare on wheels.
Yeah. Oh, God.
It's like Bridezilla, but Momzilla.
Yeah, just she had certain expectations for us, and it's not because she wanted things the way she wanted them done. Like, she did, but it wasn't about that. It's because she had these expectations because she knew we could live up to them, because she thought, oh, my kids are so great, and they're going to do it, and you're going to be impressed at how well they're doing it. Yeah,
but it's like more, it feels a little bit more like her kids were props.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, These were, this was the, she was putting on a show, and these were the characters in it.
I remember my older cousin, I think she was 16.
Yeah.
Our grandparents wanted tickets to fly back to Mexico for a while, and my mom had to ask her to look up plane tickets on the computer, and we didn't know how to do that. And I remember her being so mad at us, like, why can't you look tickets on the computer? Like, what else do we have the computer for? Why don't you know how to do that?
She just expected you to be able to do things that you'd never done before.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, give me some positives and negatives. Tell me some of the good things that came from it, and then give me some bad things.
Like I said, I'm glad I have these skills. It wasn't until one of the other cousins taught me that, like, if you're the one that's in charge of cooking, then tell him to eat it how you make it or eat nothing at all. That gave me a lot of confidence, and it made me more secure in myself of, like, you know what you're doing, and you're doing it right. So, you know, don't worry about what they think. And that really stuck by me.
Sure.
One of the negatives, oh God. It was very boy-centered
yeah.
for a good while, for a good chunk growing growing up. Yeah. I was the middle child for a good while until my younger sister came along.
Sure.
So there was a lot of, like, no-nos that were not allowed for me. I remember, like, being really sad that I got a baby doll for the umpteenth time.
Yeah.
As a present. Like, not that I didn't like baby sure. dolls, but also, you know, I want...
Yeah, diverse interest, yeah.
I want, yeah. If I'm growing up around my brothers, I also want the things that, you know, light up and do actions. Mm-hmm. And I feel so bratty for saying I want variety in my toys.
Yeah, but basically you were just, like, treated like a little girl all the time.
Yeah, I was treated like a little girl, whatever. It's not that I didn't appreciate what I got. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, I want diversity.
Right.
Yeah, I remember one time my mom got really mad at me for doing a somersault.
Really?
Yeah, because I was wearing a skirt and she said, don't do that because boys are going to look up your skirt.
Oh, for God's sake.
And I remember, like, I had my hands and my feet on, like, I was just, like, standing on all fours.
Yeah.
She said, don't do that either because, you know, your butt's out. And... I remember getting really upset at, like, I don't want to wear that type of clothes. I want to wear pants. And she's like, that's not for little girls. It's just very, what's it called? When it's just one gender?
Gendered?
Gendered? I don't know. I'm so sorry.
I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
Just if you're raised in a certain type of environment, you're going to learn certain things. And I didn't have any, you know, girls to play with.
Right.
Like, I'd see my cousins every once in a while, but even then, they were quite a bit older than I was, and I didn't really know how to fit in with them.
Right.
And it just made more sense to do what the kids my age, who were also boys, to do what they were doing.
Sure. How do you think that affected you later in life?
Oh, my goodness. I definitely went through a phase, middle school, high school, when I dressed only in boys' clothes because my mom also dressed me in boys' clothes, giving me my older brother's hand-me-downs to wear to school.
Hmm.
Because it was super big, so she figured I'd grow into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the right colors, so, you know, wear it. And it didn't matter if it made me feel good or if it looked nice. It's just wear it because we have it, and it's not going to cost me any money. And it made me feel like I knew I wasn't pretty,
mm-hmm.
or I didn't have the confidence to try to look nice.
Right.
Sort
of beats you down a little.
A little bit, yeah, it does. And my mom would always get mad at me for, like, why don't you dress yourself up and why don't you try to make yourself look nice? Well, like look what you're giving me.
This is what you're giving me, yeah. But she seemed like the kind of person who would always blame everyone around her for the things that she did. There was a lot of projection going on.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't know why she ever expected me to do something I've never done before.
Right.
And then trying to do something, she'd shame me for it.
Yeah.
Like, you're asking for attention in the wrong type of ways.
Yeah. Like, it's like a toxic work environment, but it's one you can't escape.
Yeah.
It's where you have a really shitty boss who treats you like garbage, but you can't just quit.
It messed me up for a long time, yeah. And it made me so ashamed to have the body that I did. So for the longest time, I just wore boys' clothes,
yeah.
And I would actively pick stuff out from the boys' section of the store, yeah. And it made me feel even more separated from, you know, the friends I did have, or
right.
And I questioned myself, like, you know, what should I be doing and what aren't I doing? And there was a lot of confusion there for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it only made it worse that my mom would make me feel bad for it.
Yeah. Well, it sort of feels like she was, like, threatened by any one of you having a life outside of her. And that meant you do everything that she wants you to do, but you're also constantly getting in trouble if you're not doing it exactly the way she wants you to do it. And she doesn't want you to have a sense of independence or freedom, because then that would mean that you might not rely on her as much. She has to be the sole source of authority, and she has to be the sole source of everything.
I just feel like she had an idea of what things should look like, and if they're not the way they should be,
everything must be out of place.
Something must be going wrong.
Yeah.
And if it's not corrected, it's only going to keep going wrong.
I've had family members who believed that their way was the only way. And it wasn't just if your opinion was different. It's like, well, you know, we agreed to disagree. It was that you are doing it wrong and you need to change.
Yeah.
Because it is not the right way. And everything is wrong with the world if you don't do it this way.
I think we're getting off topic. What's the next?
Yeah. So, I don't know. Tell me about the individual members of your family. What they like. What can you tell me?
There's my mom. She was dang old piece of work. Mm-hmm. She was ahead of the family.
She was the matriarch.
Definitely. There was my dad, who's a good provider, not very good job of being a dad.
Yeah.
He's
sort of there.
He was there, and he was there to back up my mom to what she was saying, and every once in a while he'd come in and be the nice guy. Mm-hmm. And be like, yeah, you know, your mom just beat you, but hey, here's an ice cream.
Yeah.
And
cold comfort.
Yeah. I remember there, he'd always have the freezer stocked with like those gigantic bags of popsicles from Costco. Mm-hmm. There it is. Like, I hope this makes up for, you know, if you're feeling sad.
Do you think that made you look towards like food and sugar as a source of comfort?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, God. That's definitely part of the reason that we were so fat when we were young. Yeah. I've told this before, but my mom said, if you're chubby, you're not hungry, which means you're healthy.
Okay.
And it wasn't until it became a issue that she started actively doing something about it.
Yeah. But then she turned around and treated you like it was your fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a really hard way to live, because it's like you can never do anything right. Like, even if you obey authority, you're still going to get in trouble. And it's like that's just creates this like really confusing situation for a child that translates into a lot of trauma later in life.
Yeah. I remember getting such a thrill ride from sneaking a candy bar.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not supposed to be eating this, but I am eating this, and I'm not going to get caught, and I'm going to enjoy this so much. Right. Because, you know, we're not supposed to be doing this, but we are.
Right. It was almost less about the food, more about the sin.
Yeah. Like, I'm doing something my mom doesn't want me to do.
Right.
And it's so awesome.
It was your tiny little bit of liberation.
This is my second popsicle. I'm mm-hmm. only supposed to have one, but this is my second.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing she can do about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna go on.
Keep going.
Okay, I'm sorry. Is this, yeah?
Do you think you apologize a lot because of everything that happened in your childhood? Keep going.
That's all women. We apologize for everything too much.
No, it's true.
I have an older brother. He was in charge while there weren't adults there. Mm-hmm. But while he was in charge, I was like the wizard behind the...
Yeah, doing the actual work.
Yeah, I was... What's it called?
The curtain. The man behind the curtain.
Behind the curtain. Yeah, he's like the big ghost figure, right. And I'm like behind. He's like, okay, we need to do this, and that. Mm-hmm. And then he and my brother would like go off and do like this and that, and then I'd do like the rest of everything else. Mm-hmm. It's now that I think back of it, I think the workload was a little heavier on my side at a certain age.
Yeah,
That's just because they knew I became real anal about it. Mm-hmm. And they knew that it's most likely that I would get involved if mom comes home and sees that certain work wasn't done.
Right. The scapegoat, basically.
Younger brother, oh my goodness. He grew up thin.
Huh.
He grew up thin, and I think that's because of the asthma. Yeah. I'm not sure, but he grew up thin, and there was a lot of luxury because of that.
Yeah.
Like, good for him. He, I can say I don't know too much about him now, but it looked like he was having a good time just running around doing boy stuff. Good for him.
Yeah. Everybody turned out in a different way.
Yeah. Younger sister, I hated her.
Mm.
When we grew up, I think that's kind of natural.
Sure. Rivalry.
I remember dropping her once as a baby. Oh, God.
Wow.
I was young. I was young.
And it's funny you take care of babies now.
Shut up. It wasn't hard. Anyways, I grew up helping to raise her. I remember getting up at 5-something in the morning and being like, baby's crying, better go make that bottle.
Yeah.
And I was making the bottle, and my mom's like, thank you. but we grew up as close as two could be just because we were sharing a room together. She was, you know, spoiled a little bit because she was the youngest one of the whole family, the extended family, for a while.
Was she treated better, do you think? Like,
oh, yeah.
Than you were?
Oh, heck yeah. She does not know how to cook.
Sure.
She doesn't know how to clean.
So she was really babied.
And she doesn't even know that much Spanish.
Huh, really?
Yeah, she was babied just because at that point, I was the one already doing everything.
Right.
And she'd get off doing one or two things.
You were already playing the mother role, so she got to be the child.
Yep.
Yep.
And she knew that I think she did it on purpose, but I'm not sure that she'd do things purposely wrong, so I would come back and just say, let me do it.
Yeah. Was there anybody else that played an important role?
Yeah. Like I said, we grew up with a couple of uncles living at home.
Mm-hmm.
All three of them eventually got married and moved out of the house.
Hmm.
But they all played a very specific role in raising us alongside of our parents. And the days that they were in charge were the better days because it gave us a break from either the person that needed everything done a certain way and the person that just didn't know what they were doing, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my dad's a good guy, but he's not the one to raise children.
Again, he was just sort of there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he could make sure we didn't die.
Yeah. Maybe.
No.
He hadn't had too much to drink, right?
Oh. But yeah, he kept us alive.
Yeah.
That's what mattered. Grandma.
Yeah.
She did her big hand in taking care of us too.
Yeah.
She taught me that it's okay if I'm chubby.
Right.
Just, you know, take care of yourself while you're chubby.
Yeah.
And my grandpa was just the coolest guy.
It sounds like you would have been better off if you were raised by your grandparents.
Maybe.
Yeah.
My mom said she had a rough time with her growing up.
Maybe they mellowed out in their old age or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just they were grandparents. You know, they spoiled their grandkids.
Yeah.
Or like waking up to the best breakfast made by my grandma, and then later on, my grandpa would take us to the park, and he'd buy us ice cream while he'd like smoke 2.5 packs.
You said that one of them was a really good cook, right?
Yeah.
Your grandma.
They both are. Yeah.
And there was, like, a special thing that they would make?
Yeah, my grandma in the morning would make fried rice and ham and eggs on the side.
Oh, wow.
It was so it was so savory and delicious.
Was it your granddad who made the barbacoa?
Yeah, grandpa makes the best carnitas.
Carnitas.
With a big, gigantic copper pot.
Yeah.
and he'd always like rip off a little piece of meat and dip it in the salt water and feed it to you, and it was always so mouth-watering delicious. Oh goodness. He once he melted half his foot to make carnitas for one of my cousin's quinceañeras.
Really?
Yeah, and that night he went like with one dress shoe and one like sandal with his burnt cook foot like off to the side.
Wow.
It was like slathered in ointment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little extra meat in there just for flavor.
No. Like when he was like pouring out all the like burned oil.
Right.
It had gotten on his foot. It
splashed on his foot.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
yeah. He didn't like dip his foot in there.
It's like, get a little of that fungus in there.
Like, when you're cooking, you put your foot in it.
It's grandpa's special ingredient.
Yeah. No, it splashed on him. Oh, goodness.
Well, I don't know. Anybody, any other significant mentions? Shout-outs to the...
Shout-out to Tia Silvia for also being super cool. And she appreciated me when I slept over at her place so I could like play with my cousin Kiwi and get some sage life advice from my cousin Jasmine Valentina.
Mm-hmm.
We used to love playing together. We would play GameCube together.
Nice.
And I wet the bed once and she let me and she helped me get away with it.
Nice. Partners in crime.
Yeah. She'd be like, you were washing the dishes and I didn't even have to ask you. How amazing. she was always great. Cousin Lucila, who we're just about the same age. She's a lesboon.
Cool.
I don't know if the rest of the family knows that. I think they do. Yeah, they do.
Otherwise, they're going to find out.
I'm sorry if I outed you. I don't think I did. Point is, she also went through a little bit of the identity crisis with me.
Sure.
Because she grew up stealing my younger brother's clothes and being all tomboy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until later on in life that she accepted herself.
It takes a while.
Yeah.
It really does. Especially when you grow up in a household like that. Speaking of which, do you... Now, at 23 years old, right? When you look back, can you see, like, what parts of that have shaped who you are now?
Oh, definitely. I know now what abuse looks like.
Yeah.
I couldn't see it.
'Cause you normalized it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was told that this isn't abuse, this is punishment.
Uh-huh.
And you deserve it.
Right.
But the fact is, it's not okay.
No.
To do certain things to your child.
Right.
And I don't know how much I want to say.
That's all right. You don't have to say everything.
Okay. It's just, yeah, there are certain things that shouldn't be done.
Right.
And as a child, you don't know if it's okay or not, especially if your parent is saying, this is just how it is,
right,
and learn to deal with it. It's going to happen everywhere.
No matter, yeah.
If your parent is telling you and don't tell anyone,
right,
maybe it's a sign you should tell someone.
Maybe it is, yeah, because it is, then something is wrong. That means, but it gets to the problem of, like, when you're a kid, you look at your parent as the source of all truth.
Yeah.
And so if they're telling you, you know, to cover up what they're doing,
mm-hmm,
you're just going to take it as a fact that that's the way it needs to be.
I think the fact that my mom, like, heard us openly in front of other family members and they didn't do anything about it was another reassuring sign that this is just what happens.
This is just what happens, yeah, because nobody else is stepping in because this is normal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you could go back, right?
Yeah.
When you were young and you could pick an age, what would you do?
Oh, I would, do my best to do well, better in school.
Uh-huh.
And I'd save every scrimp and scrap of cent I could get my hands on and just tuck it away.
Just beg, borrow, and steal. Yeah.
Yeah. And tuck it away And then the day I turned 18, I'm out.
Right.
And just flip her off as I go away.
Not a minute longer.
Not a minute.
That's the thing. It's like you got to escape the situation as soon as you can. And even if it's your family. Because the thing is, people take family as gospel. Like, it's, well, my family, so I have to be near them. I have to be with them. I have to do this. I have to do that. It's like, no. You are with these people by accident of birth, right? Mm-hmm. And if they are cruel or toxic or criminal to you, then you get the hell away as soon as you possibly can when the circumstance allows. Don't let this notion of it's blood, so I have to. Mm-hmm. Because you only get one life to live.
Yeah.
And if your family is actively harming you, then they're not your family, right? You go out into the world and you make your own family. But those people are cruel and they're strangers.
I remember thinking at some point that it is just what you do. And I was taught as a girl that everything is so much more different and you're a lot more powerless and you have to do this in order to keep your safety.
Right.
And the times I've tried to go outside of it, I got burned.
Right.
But I think that was more coincidence than anything.
Yeah. More situational.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for certain things, I think I would have been okay otherwise. It doesn't matter who or what you are. Being able to find something better for yourself shouldn't be situational. It's just a thing that should be able to happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you think if people are raised a certain way, they're always going to be like that? Or do you think that, I mean, I know it depends on the circumstance, but do you think that people can change their own lives, that they can ultimately escape that?
It's hard.
Yeah.
I'm proof that it's hard.
It's hard, yeah.
I flipped the switch and I hit the reset button real hard, because right until up the day that I left my family, I was doing everything I could to be, you know, what I thought was right for me to do.
Yeah.
Oh goodness. I didn't ask for more than I should have. I kept real quiet. I didn't make trouble. I did everything I was supposed to.
Well, because you didn't believe that you deserved anything.
No.
You were taught to not believe in yourself. You were taught to believe that you were lucky to get anything.
I was taught to be of service to others and then provide for yourself, especially to your family. But that's some BS.
It is some BS. And when a family is telling you that, or when a family member is telling you that, they're doing it for their own benefit and not for you and not for the family as a whole.
Yeah, I got into, oh God. I'm sorry, could you keep it going?
Yeah. So.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm back. I'm back.
We're back.
I believe a person can make their lives better if they choose to. And if you see the opportunity, take it.
Right.
It's going to be hard not to second guess yourself, but if you see it, take it. And if you end up, if it is frying pan into the fire type of thing, you're going to be burned, but try to recover, because it didn't work out so great for me the first time around. Right. But the second time around, I can say things are a lot better.
Well, that's the thing too, is not to assume that because you tried to make a change and it didn't work, or maybe things got worse, which it can. I mean, that's a risk that you take when you try to make a dramatic change in your life. Just know that, like, that isn't how it's always going to be, right? It's sometimes it's luck of the draw. If somebody flips a coin twice and it lands on heads, they shouldn't then go ahead and make the assumption that it's always going to land on heads, right? And I'm not trying to be like, you know, life is just a random game of chance, but you have to try, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the moral of the story. So, like, what would be, like, your advice to people who are in situations like you asked me?
Just keep trying. If you want to make it out, you can make it out, but you have to be able to put yourself out there. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but you just got to get out there.
Right. And you'll be able to look back and realize that all that effort was worth it at some point.
You just got to be able to be willing to get hurt if it should happen, and be able to recover. It doesn't matter how long it takes to recover, as long as you get somewhere where you can say it was worth it.
Yep. It's hard to play the long game, but it is worth it.
Oh, yeah. I've been with you a year?
Almost and a half, yeah.
Year and a half, yeah-ish?
Yeah.
I can definitely say it was worth it.
Yeah.
Everything was worth it.
Yeah. And it will continue to be worth it. And once you're at a place where things are good for a while, you have then the like, both physical and financial and mental ability to start building up from there, right?
Yeah, I grew up, I want to say sheltered.
Yeah.
Because I played the role of the female. Very straight.
Yep.
You know, I took care of others, and then I took care of myself, and I did what I was supposed to. And I didn't make any big moves or did anything too special.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until I made my big move that I discovered who I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to do. There's a lot of life choices and things that are still with me, and they've stuck to me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not by my choice, but it is what it is, and I've been able to make the best out of it.
Mm-hmm. And it's like you're 23, and you gotta sometimes imagine yourself at 33. You know what I mean? It takes a while to emotionally struggle yourself out of some of these situations, and a lot of times you need help, and you need to gather all the resources that you possibly can to make it happen. But over enough period of time, the chaos starts to subside if you make an active effort of it.
Oh, yeah. You got to remember that it's all building blocks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Build the foundation and go from there.
Yeah. And you taught me a lot about what's that word? Compartmentalizing.
Compartmentalizing.
Compartmentalize. Yeah, put it in a box and put it away.
So I really believe it. Like, you know, movies and TV has taught us that we have to confront every terrible thing in our lives, and we have to work through it all. And the problem is sometimes that's too much for a human being to handle. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can only do it in little bits and pieces. But sometimes maybe it's okay to put things in a box and lock it away until you can deal with it. Or maybe you never can deal with it, but maybe you put it in a box and lock it away until you can pull it back off the shelf because you've grown emotionally and now you're able to deal with it. I have, you know, I told you I have all of my mom's stuff that we carried around for so many years, all of her paperwork and all of her like artwork and stuff that she, you know, built up over time that was a physical burden to us, not just an emotional one. And I have it in a storage shed, and I've had it there for about 2.5 years because I am still not emotionally in a place where I can deal with it, right?
Can I say something?
Yeah.
Okay. It's been two and a half years
mm-hmm.
since I've seen my family,
mm-hmm.
and I am not in very frequent contact with them.
Yeah.
I'll make a phone call maybe once every 2 months.
Sure.
It sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's about right. And I'm about to go see them again in December.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very excited to see them, mostly because I want to see the people I do like.
Yeah. Yeah. Count your blessings where you can, right?
Yeah. I'm excited to see things I remember, things I enjoy doing. I want to show you all the good things. But there's also the things that I need to confront.
Yeah. And maybe you can take those negative things and compare them to your life now and say, look how far I've come, and this makes me a little less homesick, you know?
You know what I'm looking forward to? I remember when I didn't know where something was, my mom would say, what, are you new here? And I can say, yes, Mom, I am new here. Yeah. I haven't lived here in so long.
Yeah.
And
because you're kind of a different person now in some ways.
I'm a very much different person.
Because you're in a completely different context and you have interacted with different people and you've not had the burden of that on top of you all the time.
I'm looking, yeah, I'm going back with fresh eyes, mm-hmm. but I don't know how to act because I've been away so long, and yeah. the only way I do know how to act is being a little scared.
Yeah.
But I'd like to say that I'm now not so scared, because if I want to, I can just leave. Yeah. And there's nothing they can do about it.
And it's going to be really important that we not stay so long that it becomes a trap, like emotionally, right?
Yeah. But point is, I want to loop back around and say I'm ready to get the key out, mm-hmm. and I'm going to unlock that box, and I'm ready to deal with this thing that should have been taken care of a long time ago.
That's good. Any other final thoughts?
If you want help, you can get help. And remember, as lame as this may sound, you are your greatest resource, and you can take yourself as far as you want to. It might take a long time to get where you want to be, but as long as you have a plan and a way to start, go on.
Yep. Pick up your bags and move. And I mean that both, you know, physically and mentally.
Yeah. Take what you can and go.
I'm in agreement with that.
Do your best. And, you know, it's out there.
Well, I think that's a wrap for us.
Yeah, I think we're going to wrap up here. This was nice.
That was good. Yeah, good to talk it out sometimes.
Okay, give us all your thoughts and feelings on Twitter at pod_dead.
Like and subscribe.
If you'd like, tell us a box that you've been meaning to open up and deal with. Like, maybe you have issues with dogs because you got bit by a dog once, or maybe you just really don't like you really don't like bees for some reason.
Yeah, or maybe you're like the child of a billionaire who has a lot of emotional problems and is the president of the United States, and your name is Baron, and you just want to talk.
Blech. Or maybe you grew up on the streets and you remember eating pizza out of the garbage.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Pizza rat. We want to hear from the pizza rats out there.
Oh, my God.
All right. This is fun.
This is great. Remember, @pod_dead. We'll see if we can get one out before December. Hopefully yep. we can try to be consistent and make maybe. One every month.
We keep
month.
Saying it, though.
Let's try to keep one every month. And we're right. definitely going to do one. When we get back from our trip.
Okay, yeah. We'll do a little road audio, maybe.
That'd be great.
That would be cool.
All
right. See you next time.
Thanks for listening in with us. Okay.
Bye.
Take care there. Bye.